to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. As always, we begin by placing our humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami. And dear listeners, we wish all of you, both myself and Prem, on behalf of the whole Radio Sai team, we wish you a happy and holy Shankranti, Lohri, Pongal and greetings for Uttarayanam. You know, this is a very special time of the year. Bhagwan would very often emphasize on it in his Shankranti discourses. The beginning of Uttarayanam. What is Uttarayanam? Uttarayanam is the time when the sun begins its northward journey. Of course, we know that the sun, earth, they are in their same positions and the earth is moving around the sun. But from the earth, it appears as if the axis of the sun is moving northwards. And Swami said that this has great inner significance. He would say that the sun moving northwards with relation to Bharat, with relation to India, is the sun moving towards the Himalayas, the Himachala. The Himachala meaning, you know, Sanskrit is such a beautiful language. At one level, Himachala means the mountains which are filled with snow. At the other level, Achala means steady, fixed. That's why the mountains are called Achala. And Hima also means cool and pure. Swami would say that the sun moving northward indicates a shift in consciousness towards God. That is why you will see in India many of the important tasks, projects will all begin after Uttarayanam, when the sun moves northward. Swami would go deeper and say that this is the time when everyone's mind should be focused towards God, because whatever you start at this point in time is likely, very likely to bear fruit. And therefore, why not start the greatest task, the greatest quest, which is the quest for God. And just as the sun moves northwards towards Himalayas, the abode of Lord Shiva, one's mind also should move towards God in the Uttarayanam. And beautifully, Swami has designed the sports meet to be held during this period. This is a time when everybody is doing something in order to please Swami. So irrespective of what one is doing, the focus is Swami. It is so unconsciously ensured. All this is Bhagwan's beautiful planning. So it is on such a beautiful day, such a beautiful period, that we have gathered for this afternoon satsang, where our thoughts are going to be centered on Swami. With that introduction, I welcome Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and I think there's one more point about the Uttarayanam which Swami would often refer to. He spoke about beginning something. Swami speaks of that great devotee who chose to end something on Uttarayanam. Swami would speak about Bhishma. That, you know, he was one character in mythology who had the Ichcha Mrityu, or the one who could choose when he discarded his body. And that was one of the powers in the Kaurava army, because they felt that nobody can slay him because he chooses when to die. But of course, we know the story of how Lord Krishna plays the cards in such a way. He says that he might not die, but he will definitely be put in a situation where he cannot participate in the war. When, you know, he's been made to lay on a bed of roses. I'm sorry.
Bed of arrows.
My God. That's such an idiom. It's got its way through. No, bed of arrows, that he chooses to hold on to his life till the point where Uttarayanam starts to end his earthly sojourn. Swami would often say that, you know, that's how auspicious Uttarayanam is. And I can recollect many, many times when Swami would wait for an Uttarayanam to start something, especially when Swami would give jobs to the boys in the ashram. Swami would invariably say, you know, wait till Uttarayanam. And that would sometimes mean waiting for half a year, because boys would finish by June, you know, the academic year starts in June. Swami would often make them wait till January so that they can start their career. That's how auspicious and special Uttarayanam is. Swami would give a lot of emphasis for that.
And not only jobs, even I think when time would come to decide about the mass thread changing thread ceremony and other such ceremonies, Swami would give importance to Uttarayanam. And that's why, Prem, I feel it's so wonderful that we decided to embark on this topic where we thought we will delve into great detail on each of the Navavidha Bhakti Marga. Dear listeners, as we had introduced last week, this week we are taking up Shravanam. And again, you know, we are thrilled by this beautiful way in which Swami has arranged this satsang. Because Shravanam, or listening, is possibly the easiest way to immerse ourselves in God, because apparently not much effort is needed. One just has to sit and listen. Nothing is there to be done, not much energy to be spent. And in a period which is supposed to be sanctified by making the mind dwell upon the Lord, we are starting a satsang on Shravanam and we are listening to Swami's glories. I think this coincidence is yet another instance where Swami anonymously, it's not anonymous because we know it is Him, Swami hidingly has made it possible for this beautiful synchronicity to happen.
Absolutely. You know, when we often recollect those words of Adi Shankara, where he says, Satsangatve Nisangatvam. I mean, invariably, most satsangs are listening. You know, of course, our satsang, we both participate, but most of our listeners, you know, the approach to a divine satsang is almost invariably through listening, the act of listening. That's why, you know, it's always prescribed, you go and listen, sit in a satsang. There are satsangs which last for days together, you know, when you have that saptaham kind of a satsang, where you do nothing but listen. And
For a
week. And that is why the listening itself, as we had that introductory session last week, listening itself can be of many times. Listening can be accidental. You know, when you come across, we've heard many devotees share that kind of an experience. They're walking down an alley and they hear bhajans come from a house. They go sit there. They're so drawn by bhajans. You know, they don't know about Swami. They've not heard. They've not seen a picture of Swami. Just sitting there in the bhajans, they find a calm descending on them and they're so drawn. There are some people who Swami would give a lot of emphasis on Nagar Sankirtan in the initial years of the organization. Swami would tell them that you don't even have to carry a picture around. You know, a lot of people would do that. You know, you carry a palanquin with Swami's picture, an altar. Swami said, not required. Just go around early in the morning, Brahma Murtam, just singing bhajans. A lot of devotees in the initial years who came to Swami, drawn by that Nagar Sankirtan done by devotees in some cities. It's a very queer thing, you know, early in the morning you see a group of people going around singing, which is actually a tradition in India, though it's nothing new in that sense. But in cities when modern people, you know, start their day like that, a lot of people have got drawn to it. So one way is when you accidentally hear about Swami, you accidentally know about something like that.
You know, when you're speaking about Nagar Sankirtan, I was reminded a few years that I stayed in Bombay, we used to have this Nagar Sankirtan originating from a temple and culminating in another temple.
Okay.
And the temple people would feel very happy because very rarely do they get people at 5 o'clock in the morning when the temple is opening to come in such large numbers, you know,
okay,
to start off a worship. Sometimes the priest himself would be surprised and he would feel guilty because he himself comes at around 6. Sadly, the city culture that has seeped in is such that we keep awake late in the night till 12, 1. Even I have myself heard with my own ears where the time is almost 12 o'clock, 12:30 and I tell people that, you know, I have to go back home. It's not actually a party as such, it's just that some old friends, so-called friends, are all meeting up and talking, and one of them tells me that you're leaving at 12:30, the night is still so young. You know, the night is supposed to, I think it's almost old and dead by the time it's 12 o'clock. Because as Swami has taught us, that is a tamasic time, and we are taught that you sleep early, go to bed by 9, 9:30, rise by 4, Brahma Muhurtam. Because I remember Raja Reddy Garu, who spent so many years in the close proximity of Swami, he was asking some of us what time we rise in the morning. And when, we said, we tried to be a little angelic and goody-goody and said, sir, by 6:30 we get up, he said, half your day is already wasted. Because 4 to 6:30, what all you can achieve in any sense, it's not just a spiritual sense. Even in a worldly sense, even in terms of whatever you wish to achieve, the way you are able to do it in that Brahma Muhurtam is amazing. So, it is sad, as I said, in the city, no one possibly gets up even till 7 o'clock unless you are working at some other country shift in a BPO or you are working, something like that. Because many organizations now work 24/7. So, in that sense, early in the morning, in the Brahma Muhurtam, it is a time when even scientifically we can achieve the maximum. At such a point in time when these beautiful vibrations are being spread, the name of Lord, the name of the Lord. You know, it might not even be that some people, many people get drawn to Swami because of that. Even if they're not drawn to Swami, Swami would say that it will be benefiting. It benefits not only the people who are listening, consciously, it benefits even the people who hear the, who come in touch with the vibrations unconsciously. Not only the people, everything, you know, the trees, the plants, the animals possibly, the society. In fact, Swami would say this is the way you cleanse society. So, though we can judge the impact of Nagar Sankirtans by the number of incidents where devotees say that they were drawn to Swami by listening to bhajans, I feel that is not the complete impact, because there is some impact that's happening that we are not even aware of, but we believe it is happening because Swami has said so.
Definitely, I think that's the point we'll have to make here, because one thing is listening accidentally, and the benefit you would receive even without, you know, you understanding what is the benefit. As you said, most of the time the bhajans, the Nagar Sankirtan and the Veda chanting also, Swami would often say, you know, whether you subscribe to the idea that it's beneficial or not, you benefit. You know, you don't need to know the composition of the medicine to receive benefit from the medicine. But when you talk about the Navaveda Bhakti, as we said, it is a path for devotion. So when you're talking about a devotee, when you're saying that, you know, I am focused on receiving something which is received at the end of a spiritual devotional journey, all of these things, as we say, as we go through the weeks, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and all of these things have a little more profound meaning than the word per se. When you say Shravanam, you're talking about listening. You can accidentally listen, but a devotee tries to listen with a certain amount of purpose. You know, when a lot of our listeners write to us and they say, when we are traveling, when we are on a long journey, when we are stuck in the traffic, we are listening to Radio Sai, we download Swami's discourses and listen. I think that is one step higher, when you could probably be listening something else, but you're listening to something which is beneficial. Still, it is not the ultimate. Still, you're still filling your time. You know, you are doing something else. Lot of people who, I mean, they might be in their work, sitting at their desk, they'll be listening to Radio Sai in the background. So you are still not dedicating time to listen to something which is spiritual, but you are listening to something. You could be listening to anything else, but you choose to listen to something which is good.
Yeah, so I think possibly in our terminology, we can call this as passive listening versus active listening. Passive listening is that circumstance where you happen to be passing by a shop and Swami's bhajan is playing, or you walked into a temple and therefore heard Devi Mahima going on, or you happen to hear the azan coming out from a mosque, or the carols being sung in a church, and you just feel good for a moment. Yeah, that is passive listening. Active listening is when you choose that you want to listen and pick something and listen. So
I think the little more active listening would be when you give out certain part of your day. You know, you dedicate that time only for listening.
Yeah, so it is not very, like very a once in a while activity.
Exactly.
It
when becomes you, part probably of your life. When you go and attend a satsang, you know, we all have this beautiful opportunity to share our thoughts with devotees here. You know, it's so beautiful. A lot of devotees give that 1 hour a day, 10:30 to 11:30, whether it's raining, whether it's hot. They come all the way, you know, they give up, they can't do anything else. When you're sitting in a satsang hall, you can't fiddle with your mobile, you can't read a newspaper, you can't read a book. So you have consciously given that 1 hour, 1.5 hours to listen. I think that's a very rare thing nowadays, you know, when you consciously give something. I mean, even now when we are probably listening to something, we tend to do something else at the same time.
Exactly.
Right. So that those people who, you know, consciously give that 1 hour to listen, there are some people I know, they take 1 hour every morning, sit in their altar and listen to a discourse of Swami. as a prayer. You know, that is a little more active than, you know, even choosing to listen.
So possibly we can call that focused listening. So we have passive listening, active listening, and focused listening. Focused listening is where
a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, where you are choosing to listen, at the same time not doing it as one among several things. All your attention, everything is on it. And, you know, speaking of focused listening, I'm reminded of our scriptures of King Parikshit. Because we have to be grateful to Parikshit, who attained so much personally from this kind of focused listening. But it didn't stop at that. His focused listening has benefited whole of humankind today. And I don't think it would be out of place to just recollect in brief his story. It was that point in time which is believed to be the transition between the Dwapara age and the Kali age. And Kali Yuga, which is supposed to be the worst among the four yugas, approaches Raja Parikshit and tells that my time has come now, you know, so I have to enter your kingdom. And Parikshit says, you are not going to enter my kingdom. I will ensure that you don't enter my kingdom. And it is said that the only way you can stop Kali from entering is by adhering to dharma. And because Parikshit was such a strong adherent of dharma, when he banned Kali, Kali Yuga couldn't enter his kingdom. But then Kali pleads with Raja Parikshit, tells that, you know, it is my time. It is ordained. I have to come. So, at least give me some place in your kingdom where I can stay. I need not go everywhere. And you know, place that King Parikshit gives, I feel it is very symbolic, metaphorical also for us to realize, because Parikshit tells that you can go and reside in slaughterhouses, in prostitution houses, in gambling dens, and in alcohol dens.
Okay.
You know, where alcohol is consumed, where animals are slaughtered, where prostitution happens, where gambling. These areas you go. Because, you know, it is like Raja Parikshit feels that there is no ruin that can happen by Kali going there. Because already it's in the worst state of ruin. I feel that's a very, very strong message if we see the deeper repercussions. So, Kali goes and starts residing there. And you know, gambling is all about money and gold. So, there's an extrapolation. It so happens that when King Parikshit is on a hunt, Kali makes this extrapolation that hunting is also a kind of slaughtering of animal. And the king is wearing a crown which is made of gold, which is actually used in gambling. So at that point in time, Kali goes and resides in Raja Parikshit, it is said. And because of that, when Raja Parikshit is completing his hunt, he gets separated from the hunting retinue. He's all alone, lost, hungry, tired, thirsty. More than anything else, thirst. He's walking around. And as he's walking around, he comes across the hermitage of sage Shamika. Now, Shamika is lost in meditation. He's in trance. He has no body consciousness. And Raja Parikshit enters saying, I'm thirsty. Please give me some water. Please give me water. And the sage doesn't respond. And King Parikshit, the epitome of dharma, who would have otherwise never done a thing like this, does something which often we quote it as Kali Prabhavam. It is actually the effect of Kali entering. He plays a harmless prank, if you can call it so. What he does is, he's a little irritated that the sage is not responding, and here he is dying of thirst. So he sees a dead snake lying nearby. He picks up that snake, just puts it around the neck of sage Shamika and walks away. In the meanwhile, what happens is, Shringi, the son of Shamika, lands up at the spot, sees the snake around his father's neck, and he gets very angry. He says, I don't know who has done such a dastardly act, such a shameless act, whoever it might be, within 7 days of him having done this, he's going to die from a bite of the greatest snake, which is Takshaka, the king of snakes. The king of snakes will bite him and he will die. This is a curse that Shringi pronounces. It's after that that sage Shamika wakes from his dhyana, from his meditation. Again, it's so beautiful, the conversation that takes place between sage Shamika and Shringi. Shamika tells Shringi, this is a multiple test, you know. One is, of course, he says that there is Kali Prabhavam on King Parikshit, because of which he did something, but you have to appreciate, because when Kali affects somebody, what they do is really terrible. And what has King Parikshit done? A harmless thing. Nothing is going to happen because of his act. I am not disturbed in any way, nor am I agitated in any way. But more than that, this was a test to you. And there, Sage Shamika says that a tapasvi, a person who is engaged in penance, will be winning the waters of divine grace. But anger is like the fire that will evaporate that water. He says, you have failed. All your penance will become nothing, because just as water vaporizes in the presence of heat, in the presence of anger, all the good that you have accumulated as a result of your penance just get vaporized. That is what has happened, because you didn't even think of how Parikshit is only dharma bodhaka, the only person adhering to dharma in this age when Kali Yuga has begun. He is adhering to dharma, and to such a person you are given an irrevocable curse. So after that, Sringi becomes very repentant, but it's of no use. The curse has been pronounced. So I just thought of going a little into this detail, because this is such a beautiful message that Sage Shamika gives. But having got to know that he has been cursed, Parikshit's response is amazing.
Very true. In fact, that dialogue is very, very important, because from the moment Parikshit does that act of putting that dead snake, you can see all the actions which follow it are either a sign of Kali Age or a hint about how to deal with Kali Age. Even what Sringi does. The misuse of one's spiritual prowess is actually a very, very profound sign of Kali Age. That's one message. In fact, in Bhagavata, Vaini Swami calls attention to that. That here is a boy who has attained a lot of spiritual prowess, but misusing that is a perfect sign of a signature of Kali Age. And sadly, we see that a lot of times. When we look at Swami and the people around Swami, we see some people falling off the way. It's a perfect sign of that. When you look at it, Swami gave so much attention. Swami gave so much time to that person. We all have seen it, students, devotees, many of them. It's a sign of that, when you get such an opportunity of being close to Swami, it is definitely something which is earned over many, many lifetimes. But even that does not stop you from that moment's discrimination. The discrimination that each one of us have to do now. I think that's a sign for all of us, and that's precisely what happens. And as you said, in this story, after Sringi starts repenting, the sage himself, Shamika himself, is a little perplexed. How did such a thing happen? So he starts going into himself, he starts doing his penance, and then he realizes that this was all meant to be. This is how the Kali was supposed to enter in this kingdom. And then he realizes that Parikshit himself is here to give a very, very profound message to humanity. So he looks around, and apparently he calls one of the disciples and tells him, immediately go to Parikshit and tell him what has happened. Tell him that these are the things, and tell him that he has only 7 days to live. Tell him that I have sent word through, Sage Shamika has sent word through you. So immediately he goes to Parikshit, and Parikshit is away. He's kind of quenched his thirst, and he's back to his senses, and then it starts striking him what a act he has done. And he starts repenting, and he's almost contemplating giving up his life. Now that's the stage when one of the attendants comes and says that here is a hermit boy who has come to see him. And he's not angry or upset, but he's saying that he very urgently wants to see you. So immediately Parikshit goes, and the entire incident is revealed to him, and the curse has been told to him. The moment the curse has been told to Parikshit, Parikshit feels very happy that, he looks at it as a fitting punishment for a sin which he had done. And he feels that at least now I'm unburdened a little. And after this comes the point where Parikshit starts saying that I have 7 days to live. What am I supposed to do with those 7 days? And he starts calling all the sages in his kingdom. He asks them, what am I to do? This is the curse I have. I have 7 days. What is it which is the most dharmic thing to do to fill your time with? I want to know that. Because now it's a precious commodity. You have only 7 days. What is it that is the best thing to do when you have a limited period of time? That's the question he asks, and a lot of people give their opinions. They say yagas, yajnas, and probably you should do charity, probably you should, set the affairs of the kingdom right. That is more important because you're giving back something to the future generations. But he is somehow not satisfied by all this. And it is in this time, this sage Shuka comes into the picture. And he says that I will tell you what is the right thing to be done. And the scene shifts to the banks of the river Ganges, where the king, you know, is king and Shuka is there. A lot of people in the kingdom who come to know that this is what has happened, they all gather around it. And it is at this, in this stage, we have the Bhagavatam being revealed to Parikshit.
The stories of Lord Krishna.
Stories of Lord Krishna. So the next 7 days is filled by listening to the Bhagavatam. And this is how we have the Bhagavatam itself.
Shuka, Saptaham, right? We have the Bhagavatam Saptaham
right.
Precisely in this model.
And a detail I forgot to mention, Sage Shuka is the son of Sage Vyasa, who comes and Vyasa is the one who has written the Bhagavatam. And that itself is another story which Swami would say, right? How Vyasa came to write the Bhagavatam.
Absolutely. It is like Vyasa has written the Mahabharata, which is considered as the Panchama Veda, the fifth Veda. He has written everything.
Before that, he is the one who categorized the Vedas.
Exactly. Right? As a Rig, Yajur, Sama and Atharvana Veda. After doing all that, he is still not satisfied. And Sage Narada comes to him and says that, Vyasa, if you are not satisfied with what you have done, I don't think any being on this earth will ever find satisfaction. And still, Vyasa, when he says that, but what shall I do? I don't have peace in my heart. I don't have joy in my heart. That is when Narada says that, all this is fine. It is great academic achievement, but you will find joy, you will find peace only when you write about the stories of the Lord. And that is when Narada advises Sage Vyasa to take up the composing and the writing of the Bhagavatam. And it is said that it is only after writing the Bhagavatam that Sage Vedavyasa found peace of mind, found joy in his heart. So, yes, the Bhagavatam is such a phenomenal work. In fact, I feel all of us are also being part of that Bhagavatam. It's just that this is the Sai Bhagavatam. And we see how much joy we receive by being part of this Bhagavatam. So, that is the power of focused listening. You said, you narrated the story of how Parikshit decides to spend his 7 days listening to the Bhagavatam. If we just think technically, Parikshit at least knew that he has got 7 more days.
Exactly. That is his first reaction. When he is told 7 days, he says, finally, now I know that I have only 7 days. You know, otherwise you live through life and suddenly one day death comes calling and you are not prepared for it.
Absolutely. Just imagine when we are not sure if we live till tomorrow, how much more should we spend our time in Shravanam, in listening to the Bhagavatam? Yeah, be it the Krishna Bhagavatam, the Sai Bhagavatam, the Jesus Bhagavatam. I mean, the name and the form of the Lord may vary, but we have to immerse ourselves in that because we don't have the luxury of even that. I'm not sure that I'll be alive for the next 1 week. We just take it for granted and most of the time it comes true, but there are times when it shockingly happens. You have no idea. Today you're there, the next moment you're gone. You have no idea. So how much important it is that we have to spend our time in Shravanam.
Very true, and that is why, you know, this episode is so powerful. And whenever Swami would talk about the Navayuda Bhakti, for Shravanam, Swami would mention Parikshit as the example. In many ways, because here is a situation where Kali is coming, and Parikshit is of course asking about his 7 days, but he is actually asking about Kali age itself. No, you are stuck in this Kali age, you cannot run away, you cannot go back to Satyuga or Dwapar Yuga. You are stuck in this Kali age, you have time that you have to spend in this age. What is that you have to do? And that answer which he got from, you know, Shuka Maharishi is that spend it in listening to the stories of the Lord. There is no better way.
Contemplation, right? Thinking about the Lord. In fact, Swami in his discourses says Namasmarana, which is thinking of the Lord's name, is the best redemption in Kali Yuga. What better way to think of the Lord's name than to listen to His glory? Frankly speaking, Prem, whenever I have tried, you know, chanting Om Shri Sairam or Saishwaraya Vidmahe, it feels good, but sometimes, you know, it leads you to drift off to sleep maybe, or maybe it becomes like a monotonous exercise, because you, once you start doing something repetitively, continuously, our body is built in such a manner that it starts doing it even unconsciously, without actually juicing out the joy and the meaning of that. So it can become a monotony. But listening to the Lord's Leelas, which He has left behind with such flavor, such, you know, such variety, it is always amazing. We can always be full, not only in mind and body, but even in our spirit and even in our feelings, we can enjoy that. You know, speaking of Namasmarana, Shravanam. I'm reminded actually of Sai Shravanam, you know. Sai Shravanam, who is the son of the current All India Vice President. He's based in Tamil Nadu. The son of Ramani sir. He recently made news because he was one among the team which won the Oscar Award for music for the movie Life of Pi. Now, his mother was bedridden with cancer and there was no hope for a cure. And it is very interesting to note that though Swami was there supporting the family, guiding them, calming them, finally his mother actually succumbed to cancer. She succumbed to cancer, but actually nobody succumbed to cancer, because the way they took it, one has to just speak to the family to get to know how beautiful and how wonderful a cancer turned out to be because of Shravanam. And by Shravanam, I am not meaning this lad Shravanam, but the act of listening. Because in one of the interviews, Bhagwan told them that, have you got Radio Sai at home? And he told them that, you make her listen to Radio Sai, I will speak to her through Radio Sai. And that is what they did. Shravanam says that they had a Radio Sai set running in the kitchen, one running in the hall, one running in the bedroom, and wherever his mother would go, she was beautifully tended to and taken care of by her daughter-in-law, Shravanam's wife. And the daughter-in-law was there full-time at home, and she would say that only the volume of Radio Sai at different places, different venues, would be lowered or raised. But otherwise, Radio Sai was on full-time. And in fact, she would say that because of that, there was no kind of depression. Usually in a family where there's a cancer patient, there's a very high chance of depression, because the cancer patient is herself very weak, mentally also fatigued. So there's depression, and the other members in the family know that there's an impending death going to happen. So there's depression. But she says that at that home, it was never like that. It was always filled with Sai, filled with love, filled with joy. And in those moments when there would come, you know, a frustrating thought or a depressing thought, she would, you know, even as I say this, I'm getting goosebumps, because she said that magically, just as you get a depressing thought, all you have to do is just increase the volume on Radio Sai, and 100% of the time, what Swami is speaking there would be an answer to that very same frustrating or depressing thought. It was so beautiful. In fact, she narrates one incident, the Brahmarpanam incident, as I call it. She says that one day while having food in her hurry, she forgot to do Brahmarpanam. And as she put the first morsel in her mouth, she says that she remembered that, oh, I forgot to do Brahmarpanam. She doesn't know why she did it, but she just raised the volume of the Radio Sai set there, and she says the first word she heard Swami saying was, Brahmarpanam Brahmahaver Brahmagnav Brahmanahutam. And then she said, as she heard it, the food dropped from her hand, and then the first thought that came is, Swami is just giving an example, so that's it, he's going to say this much and stop. But it didn't. Swami went on to say, Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina Aham Vaishwanaro Bhutva Praninam Dehmashrita Pranapana Samayukta Pachamyanam Chaturvidam. She says that Swami chanted the whole Brahmarpanam sloka. And she said, I narrated this to my husband, to Shravanam, and Shravanam said, this is a beautiful coincidence. She said, it is not a coincidence, because Swami is there every moment. And she said, though we were in Chennai, so far away physically from Puttaparthi, every moment of the day, thanks to Swami's voice through Radio Sai, and you know, it is not that we are marketing it. Swami, the avatar himself marketed. Swami said, have you got Radio Sai at home? I will speak to her through Radio Sai. That's exactly what happened. It was a saga that pulled on for two to three years, the mother's cancer. But that was the time when the mother and all the others in the family became very intimate to Bhagwan, not in the physical sense, but in a divine manner through the heart. And that can be seen even to this day. One just has to speak to either Ramani sir, who continues to serve the organization in all his spirit and energy, or to Shravanam, or to his wife. You will realize how blessed this family is. And all this, in a large part, has come because of Shravanam, or listening.
Very true. I think story of Gopal Rao Garu also was quite similar, right? He was also a person who lived till 100 years. Mm. And he would also do this all the time. Radio Sai would be going on. In fact, he would even tell Swami that I'm having this Radio Sai running all the time in my room. And of course, it's not about Radio Sai, dear listeners. We're not telling that Radio Sai is the thing. It's about the choice that we can make. You know, when we talk about listening, when you talk as we are doing till now, it is only about the physical sounds. And physical sounds, you have the option of switching on, switching off, turning on the volume, turning off the volume. You know, that calls for very little mind control. It calls for very little ability of the mind. That is why sometimes this thing about listening is so very possible for all of us. You know, we can make that choice. Okay, do I watch a TV? Do I listen to something? You know, instead of listening to some kind of music, I listen to some other kind of music which elevates. That choice is easier to exercise than to probably listen to something which is more subtle, you know, like the voice of God within. That calls for much more effort, much more practice. But this kind of a thing, you know, I can always switch on a channel. I can always switch off a channel. I can always choose what I listen when I'm going on the car. I can always choose what I listen when I'm traveling in the metro. The first step is that. The first step is that choice have we made. And when we say that I am on a path of spirituality, I'm a devotee, I'm traveling towards such and such a destination, I think the first step is to make the choice and discriminate and choose that. I choose this over that. I choose to read this over that. I choose to listen to this over that. I choose to see this over that.
Absolutely. So the first step, as you say, is to move from passive listening to active listening, where we make a choice to hear. And, you know, that opens the floodgates for experiences, just as Shravanam's family experienced. I remember, Prem, you were narrating the incident of the other gentleman who heard Swami's discourses and got pulled to Swami, and his experience too was fantastic.
Very true, because many times when we were doing programs about, especially the Shravanam Maranam program, we'd been 1990 discourses. You know, a lot of people whom we spoke to were narrating this incident of how they heard Swami's discourse, they were drawn to it. We spoke to our Prabhakar Rao sir from the university. He was saying how he was more than anything else drawn to Swami through listening to Swami's discourse.
If I can just interrupt you here, you mentioned Shravanam Mananam. I hear the good news that program is possibly back on air.
It's a news. I hope it's a good news.
It is definitely
right,
good news.
We're starting this evening. The second part of Shravanam Mananam, the Didhyasanam.
That's fantastic.
Season 2, if you could call it that. Of course, the joy is about going back to Swami's discourse. As you're saying, I mean, as we are talking about Shravanam, you know, one thing which we thought about that program is, can we sit and listen to Swami's discourse? You know, in many ways we try to do that. We don't try to read ahead the discourse. We don't try to come prepared. Can you just sit and listen to a Swami's discourse? I think the joy which it gave us, I don't know about our listeners, the joy it gave us was tremendous. You know, when you just play a discourse for 10 minutes and just listen to it without thinking about anything, without anticipating anything, you're just listening. I mean, that is when we really realized that Shravanam is such a powerful thing. Because when we talk about listening, all the time we're talking about, you know, when we are having a conversation here, all said and done, even as you are saying something, I am thinking of what to say next, right? Because the show has to go on. We have to have a discussion here. As I'm thinking, probably you're thinking about what next to say, how to take the discussion forward. But when you're sitting and listening to a discourse by Swami, you are just listening. You're just filling yourself. You're just opening your heart and you're just filling yourself with Swami's word. I think there can be nothing more beautiful than that. I think one of the greatest legacies and blessings that Swami has left with all of us is Swami's discourse in his own voice. There is no doubt about that. You know, bhajans are beautiful, instrumental music is beautiful, even Vedas are beautiful, but to listen to Swami, to listen to his own voice, the only comparison probably you could give is if somebody comes and gives you, you know, this is the Bhagavad Gita as it was narrated by Krishna to Arjuna. It was just taped secretly, you know, you have it here. That's what a Swami's discourse is. I mean, that's the pinnacle of Shravanam which we can have.
See, Bhagwan says that in the depths of silence, the voice of God can be heard. Now that is the pinnacle of Shravanam. That is the pinnacle of listening, where there is not a single sound apparently, and yet you are able to hear, and you are hearing the voice of God. That is the height, the ultimate of Shravanam. But I feel, if we are not able to do that, when we are not able to do that, because here when we say depths of silence, it is not just muting our mouths. It's about silencing the mind, stilling the thoughts, making it like the Manasarovar, calm and placid. It is said that the Manasarovar, the lake there in the Himalayas, though it is hundreds of meters deep, you can see the bottom of the lake because it is so placid and calm. So Swami says the mind, when it's calm like that, it can explore deep. And when you look deep, you will see God, you will hear God, you will feel God. So that is the kind of silence we are talking about. But till we attain that silence, I feel that the next best thing, or the thing that comes closest to that, is the actual voice of God. The discourses that he has left behind. So that's a great legacy. And I feel those of us who wish to pursue this kind of devotion, because we know what Parikshit, Raja Parikshit attained. Shravanam is capable of conferring on you the ultimate. We have seen devotees who have achieved the ultimate with just listening. Just listening. So I feel we should make it a practice that, if not daily once, at least weekly once or weekly twice, with some regularity, we should listen to the voice of God. Because if we are not ready to listen to the physical voice of God that has been gifted to us, when will we be able to listen to the voice of God that's heard in the depths of silence?
True. And coming back to the incident which you were referring
yes.
to,
yes.
You know, this was about a person from Hyderabad who is pretty much could be defined an agnostic. He was not interested in all these things. Not really an agnostic, but a skeptic when it comes to godmen and saints and sages. You know, he was a person who probably believed more in Kali Yuga than in the bright spots of the Kali Yuga. Mm-hmm. He thought that everybody who claims to be a person of spiritual substance is nothing but a fake.
Mm-hmm.
So understandably, he was not very pleasant listening about Swami. He did not like the idea of somebody like Bhagwan Baba getting so popular. But one day what happens is, I think he's stuck in a traffic somewhere in Hyderabad.
Mm-hmm.
He's driving a scooter and he's stuck. That's when he listens to something which is coming over the PA system, and he realizes that Swami was having a gathering somewhere near that place, and mm-hmm. Swami was delivering a discourse. And that's when he gets to hear Swami's voice. And he had an argument, I think, sometime back with an elder in the family.
Mm-hmm.
About why do we do these rituals of lighting agarbattis and give aarti or do abhishekam and such things like that. And he said, you know, all said and done, if you really want to be a devotee, have a heart-to-heart connection. Why all these rituals and all these things which you don't understand at all? And that day he heard Swami giving explanations to all of these activities, one after the other, each one of the things which he had mentioned in that discussion. And he was so thrilled because he had never heard an explanation so profound before. So instantly he was drawn by Swami's, you know, the wisdom in Swami's words. And after that, every time Swami would come to Hyderabad, he would come only to listen to the discourse. You know, he was not devoted to Swami. He was not so fond of seeing Swami and having the darshan or being spoken to by Swami, just to listen to a discourse. And he had a child which had a very, very unique and, you know, rare health problem. That child had something and some kind of a skin disease, because of which the entire body of that baby, 6 months or probably a year old baby, would have lesions and would exude pus over the night. And so much so that they would wrap the child in a white soft cloth when they put it to sleep in the night. In the morning, the cloth will be soaked. They will have to remove the cloth and give a bath to the baby. Right, you know, it's such a pain even for the parents to look at a situation like this. And one day he happened to have a visitor who was an elderly relative who was very good at astrology, right? So this person looked at this baby and, you know, in the course of the discussion, he said that, I feel the 7th of January, some date like that, I think it's the 7th of January. He says, 7th of January, your child will be cured by God himself.
Right?
That's the, something like a inner voice which prompts him to tell that. So this person says, what do you mean God will come and cure? He says, no, I don't know. But this is what I feel like saying, that, you know, I'm an astrologer. I often you know, get some insights and intuition like this. And this is what my intuition says, 7th of January, your son will be cured. So this man says, see, my family deity is Tirupati Venkateshwara. You think that Tirupati Venkateshwara is going to come down the hill, travel all the way to Hyderabad and cure him on the 7th of January?
Hmm.
And she's, sir, I'm not educated like you, but this is what my intuition says. You can, or you know, you may or may not believe it. And this is what happened. And, you know, months passed and they completely forgot about it. And Swami came to Hyderabad.
Hmm.
So those days, Swami would give darshan in the morning. And in the evening, Swami would give a discourse. So he would go for the discourse in the evening. But by then, the wife was completely devoted to Swami. So she would go in the morning for Swami's darshan. Right? So, because that's the time when Swami would come around and spend some time.
Hmm.
So she was trying to take this baby every day and pray to Swami to cure this child. On one particular day, they went up to this for darshan, and Swami came by. She got up and she started praying, Swami, please cure my child, and this is the problem and all that. And Swami was trying to avoid her and walk away. At one point, she couldn't contain her grief. She started crying very loudly. And Swami turned back, came to her, and bent down and whispered in the mother's ear and the child's ear, saying that, Tagutundi, tagutundi, tagutundi. Saying that it will reduce, it will reduce, it will reduce. And Swami walked away. So after that, the husband goes for the discourse, comes back and all that. So she goes and tells her husband very delightfully. He says, you know what? Swami has cured the child. And he says, what do you mean Swami has cured the child? He said, yeah, he came and he said this, he's cured the child. I said, what do you mean cured the child? He's still the same. I don't see any change in him. And the mother was saying, no, Swami has told the child is cured. So the next day, what happens is, as always, the night they prepare the child for the night, they wrap him in the cloth. In the next morning, they go, the cloth is absolutely dry. And they open the cloth, it is almost like the child is having a new skin. There is not a single cut on that child's body, which they have not seen from the time of the birth. They've never seen the child's skin like that. It's absolutely, without a trace, it has been removed. And needless to say, it suddenly strikes him the words that
pray on the 7th of January.
Right. And he checks the time, it's the 7th of January. And, you know, I mean, there is that Padyam which Swami says, right? Where he says, the elephant is trapped through the sense of touch. The bee is trapped when it's attracted to the sight of, light. And the deer is trapped listening to something, some call of the opposite sex is played and it goes and gets trapped. It's almost like that. Swami trapped him through that fascination that he had for probably high wisdom and drew his entire family, and a beautiful miracle was there to follow.
Beautiful. Actually, dear listeners, there is one more beautiful, very wonderful miracle that one of our listeners has written into us. We will possibly share that towards the end of the satsang. That is also to ensure that you people are on the edge of your seat. It's a mind-blowing miracle. It's so beautiful. We will share it in the end. We will take a break now, after which we will continue with this satsang, because is Shravanam only listening finally, or is it something more than that? A few thoughts, of course, substantiated by what Bhagwan has said in his discourses. We will carry all that out discussion after this little break.
Bye.
Dear listeners, we're talking about the first path in the Navavidya Bhakti, that of Shravanam. We spoke about the example of King Parikshit, which often Swami gives. And we just took a break, and that song which we played actually has a significance why we chose to play that song. Because in that, I think the second paragraph speaks a very, very beautiful verse, lines. It says that if I cannot see you, what is the point of having these eyes? If I cannot hear you and think about you, what is the point of these implements which have been given to us? I think when we talk about Shravanam, we spoke about active, passive and focused listening. We are talking about that earnestness of a devotee to fill his time and life with things related to God. So does that mean that it can be done only through listening? That's a question which comes. So that gives us the scope to think whether Shravanam is confined only to this aspect of listening.
Because, Prem, I feel, what if I was born deaf? Like Helen Keller.
Absolutely.
You know? Then I can't do Shravanam. Is that the case?
You're rejected from the path of bhakti then.
Yeah, is it like that? No, I think that's why Shravanam is possibly indicator that is chosen. Just like when we say, you know, I think in English it's called synecdoche. When part is used to represent the whole. You know, when you say, yeah, when the Indian cricket team loses the match, you say India lost the match. So it's like that. So possibly Shravanam or the listening faculty is just a representation. Shravanam refers possibly to all the kinds of inputs that we get from our senses. That is through sight, through touch, through smell, and through taste as well, apart from listening. Because Swami, whenever he would speak about listening to good things, he would also dilate upon samyak drishti, that is seeing good. You know, he would always say, see good, listen good, hear to good, hear no evils, hear what is good. So, all inputs, all sensory inputs possibly can be grouped under Shravanam. And therefore, Shravanam becomes much more broad-based. You know, but why was it called Shravanam and not Darshanam or something like that? Yeah, we can come to that point a little later. But as of now, Shravanam can possibly refer to all inputs because, as we said, you know, we go astray by listening to things that are not right, things that are generally considered wrong. But it is not as if it is only the ear that leads us astray. I think in a beautiful discourse, Bhagwan narrates how each sense is in itself capable of deviating us, diverting us, distracting us away from the right path. And therefore, it is important that we take charge and ensure purity and goodness in all the inputs.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the padyam which I made a reference to too. Huh. It's a very beautiful and very thought-provoking thing which Swami says. In fact, we'll play the thing and we probably will discuss about it after that.
This is from
the 1990 summer course. We're talking about the 1990 summer course sometime back. 23rd of May, 1990.
Manavani yandunnatundi ee panchendriyamulu aneka vidhamulaintundi okka chikkulaku guri chestuntai. Five sense organs of the man put man to number of
okkokka shabdamu okkokka jeevini maatrame baadhistu vachinai.
A particular sound has a particular meaning.
Kuranga, turanga, matanga, vihanga meena mugamulavale annadu. Kuranga, turanga, matanga, vihanga meena mugamulu. Ee aide okkoka deeniki shabda sparsha roopa rasa gandhadulaku vasamaipothu vacche.
The kuranga
shabdamulaku vasamayeetundi jinka.
Deer is a victim of sound.
Sparshaku vasamaipoyi తాను బానిసగా అయిపోయేటువంటిది ఏనుగు.
ఎలిఫెంట్ బికమ్స్ ఎ స్లేవ్ ఆఫ్ ది ఎఫెక్ట్ ఆఫ్
ఏనుగు యొక్క బలము ఇట్టిది అట్టిది ఎవరు చెప్పలేరు.
సచ్ ఎక్స్ట్రాడినరీ స్ట్రెంగ్త్
అంత బలమైనటువంటి ఏనుగు కూడాను స్పర్శ చేత బంధింపబడిపోతుండాలి.
సచ్ ఎ స్ట్రాంగ్ ఎలిఫెంట్ బికమ్స్ ఎ విక్టిమ్ ఆఫ్ ది అట్రాక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది టచ్.
మిగతా అగ్ని స్వరూపాన్ని చూచి తన ప్రాణమైన కూడాను వీడి దానికి సిద్ధమైపోయి అగ్నిలో వచ్చి పడిపోతుంది.
ది బటర్ఫ్లై A particular worm is attracted by the fire and it flies into that and gets burnt.
Chepa maamsapu yokka rasanni golutu tana pranapayamunu kudanu lekka cheyaka andulo munigipothundi.
Fish is tempted by the piece of mutton and it loses its life.
Tummeda pushpamuloni makarandanni aashinchi tana pranaanni vadaltundi.
Bee swayed by the attraction of the nectar goes
ee vidhamga shabda sparsha roopa rasa gandhamunaku okkokka prani maatrame deeniki vasamai potundali.
There is a specific animal or a bird which is swayed by the attraction of the touch, the sound, the form and the smell and the taste.
Manavunaku ఐదు విధములైనటువంటి శక్తులు ఉండినప్పుడు వీడు ఎంత వశం కాకుండా ఉంటాడు.
దెన్ యూ కెన్ ఇమాజిన్ ది ప్లైట్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ హూ ఈజ్ స్వేర్డ్ బై ఇతని
విషయం చెప్పనక్కర్లేదు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ డిఫికల్ట్
అన్నింటికీ వశమైపోతున్నాడు మానవుడు.
హీ ఈజ్ అట్రాక్టెడ్ బై ఆల్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ థింగ్స్ అండ్ స్వేర్డ్ బై దెమ్.
మహాబలహీనుడైపోతున్నాడు మానవుడు.
హీ ఈజ్ బికమింగ్ రాదర్ వీక్.
Well, in that discourse, you know, Swami makes it very clear. He says the deer, because of its weakness to hearing, you know, that's what the hunter does, you know, gives out a call of a deer, gets it out into the open and kills the deer. The deer loses its life because of its weakness to hearing. In the same way, Swami says the elephant to touch. A fish gets caught, trapped and loses its life because of its weakness to taste. It comes and takes the bait and it's fished out of water and it's killed.
The moth flies into the fire and...
Yeah, that is because of its sight. They say that they got attracted like moths to a flame. Moths end their life coming to a flame. And finally, the taste, the bee. You know, it is said that there is a kind of a... it is there. These are insectivorous plants. They attract not only bees, insects by that method. They put out a tasty, sweet smelling, fragrant nectar which attracts insects from far distances. When they come and sit, the flower petals close and kill the insect inside. So the fragrance is trapping and taking the lives away of these animals. And Swami says, when each of these creatures in creation, because of one weakness, are succumbing, imagine the plight of man who succumbs to all his five senses. That is why it is so important that these senses, which are given as input points for each of us, be used perfectly only for good. And what is good? Anything that leads us towards God is good. I just feel that an extra zero has been added to God to make it sound good. But actually, anything that leads us towards God is good. Anything that leads us away from God is not good. And therefore, when we say Shravana Bhakti, it is not about just sitting and listening to things that are divine, listening to Swami's discourses. It's also about ensuring that the eyes see nothing bad but see only what is good. The tongue doesn't taste anything bad in terms of, it's not just about, you know, mental control, even physical control, you know, what the kind of food that we eat, because that's where it comes in. Good food, good sattvic bhojanam. In fact, while speaking about food, Swami would often say that food is not just that which you take in through your mouth. Food is what you take in through your eyes, through your ears also. So I feel just the reciprocal of that also works, holds true. When we say Shravanam, it is not just what we take in through our ears. It is what we take in through our eyes, through our nose, through our nose. Swami has given example saying people get addicted to drugs. So they, you know, addictions come in where you smell because of the aroma. Then listening, bad things. Same way, taking in through the tongue bad things. So it is important that when we are practicing Shravana Bhakti, when we are practicing Shravanam as a means to offer our love to God, we have to sanctify all the five senses.
And in a discourse, Swami would often say this, you know, the senses are like the windows and the doors in the house. You know, they're meant to let things inside. I mean, they are not doing something wrong if they allow something bad inside. They are meant to let things inside. They are indiscriminate. You know, it's like when you have a window open, whatever aroma or odor or stench comes by, its function is to allow it inside. It is the people inside the house who choose, you know, what to allow inside and what not to allow inside.
When to shut the window.
When to shut the window and when to keep the door open to invite whom you are inviting. And I think that is the choice. And This is a pattern we will see even as we go through all these nine paths, where each of these will, you know, the progression in each one of these. When we started last week, we said that each one of these nine paths is a path in itself. You don't have to go through each one of them to reach Atmanivedanam. You know, you can stick to the path of Shravanam and reach Atmanivedanam. And that progress in each of these paths depends on the varying amount of your discrimination and choice that you exercise, accidentally to choosing, and to have a focus and say that I want this and to labor and get it. You know, not just that, okay, I mean, if two plates are placed on my table, I choose one, or saying that no, I will eat only this and go after it and look for it and get the best option available, you know, in that this one. So I think that is what it is. And when, as you said, when we say that it is not only listening, what you see, what you eat, what you hear, what you, the company that you keep, everything comes under Shravanam. What you allow to enter into your head, I think probably can all be grouped together as Shravanam.
So Prem, I think we are safe to say that Shravanam is input. We can say that Shravanam means good input. Good input meaning godly input. And that input, whether it happens to the ear, the nose, the eyes, it doesn't matter. It has to be divine. I think we are agreed on that, right?
Right. I think that's a safe assumption to make.
Yeah.
Right now.
And having made that, now the question comes then, Prem, what we stated some time back. Why is it then called Shravanam? Why not call it Darshanam or Rasayanam? I don't know what is the word for tasting. I just made that up now. Why is it specifically toward Shravanam? That is a thought that might arise, because if it is supposed to mean all inputs, why was listening chosen to represent all the inputs?
It's difficult to say that this alone is the reason, but when Swami speaks about creation, he makes this very good, very beautiful point. You know, when you talk about the divine aspect, Swami says that I was one and there was nobody to know who I am. When you say that there was nobody to know who I am, Swami always talks about that divinity as attributeless. You know, that even if there was somebody to know, there is no way you will know it. Because there is no attribute through which you can know it. You know, when you have something in front of you, it has a form, so you know it. Or it has a particular taste, so you know it.
Yeah, if you take an apple, for example.
Red.
I can see it is red. I can smell it, get its fragrance. I can taste it and get its taste. And I can see it, of course. And yeah, when I'm crunching it or when it falls, I can hear it. Yes, all my senses enjoy it.
You can know it through your senses.
Exactly.
So when Swami says about this attributeless unity, which decided, now let me be known. Right? Now onwards, if there is a second entity, they can know me. So the first attribute which that unity created was the attribute of listening. You know, you can listen to me now. Even before you can see me, even before you can smell me, touch me, you know, feel me, you can listen to me. So that was the right. That was the first attribute the attributeless took over itself. That's what it is said.
So, I mean, that's a very, very beautiful thought, Prem. And I don't see how anybody can come up with a better reason as to why Shravanam is important. Because even scientifically, when we see, the beginning of the universe is called the Big Bang. It's not called the big scene or the big smell or the big taste. It is sound. And here also it's considered that the primordial pranava, the omkara. And even if we see in terms of the five elements, each one of them progressively gets more and more material. And they get less and less subtle.
Absolutely.
More gross they get. So the first element is akasha. Akasha, which is defined as space. And the only property of space is sound, shabda. Then akashat vayuhu. From akasha comes air. Air, along with being heard, can also be felt by the skin.
Right. Like wind.
So, when wind. So two properties. Then vayur agnihi. From vayu comes agni, fire. It gets the added attribute that it can be seen.
Seen,
now.
Right.
Then agnir apaha. From agni comes water. Now water has the added attribute that it can be tasted. You can taste water. And apa prithvi, from water comes earth, the fifth element, and it has the fifth attribute where it can also be smelt. It is only earth which can be smelt, tasted, seen, felt and heard, while akasha can only be heard. So possibly the why it was called Shravanam is because if we consider God as the subtlest, the next subtlest thing is sound, akasha, shabda. So possibly that is the reason why they chose to call it Shravanam rather than call it Darshanam or Aswadanam.
And absolutely, because it's a very, very subtle thing. And oftentimes when Swami speaks about Omkar, Swami would say that it is the form of divinity, Swami would say. In his discourses, Swami would say pranava is nothing but an embodiment of divinity. Imagine when God gets embodied, he becomes sound. that itself shows that importance of listening.
The other day I happened to be present when an interview was happening, and our Vedanarayan sir was being interviewed.
Okay.
He said something amazing. They asked him as to the language of the Vedas. Mm-hmm. And I thought the answer was pretty simple because mm-hmm. it is Sanskrit, right? What he said really stunned me and it's amazing. He said the Vedas have no language. Then I was also thinking, what does he mean it has no language? He said that the Vedas are the closest representation of God. They are just vibrations. It just happens that those vibrations were captured and put in a form for you to understand, and it is a script which is Sanskrit, that's it. I mean, just because you write it in that script, it doesn't become Sanskrit. So it's a very very subtle and fine point, but a very powerful point actually, because he said the Vedas are not in Sanskrit. The Vedas have no language because the Vedas are just vibrations. Vibrations, and when we say sound, we actually call it as vibrations. Sound is those vibrations which our ear can perceive. But there is ultrasound. There are sounds which our ears can't hear. Basically, it's just vibrations. So the vibrations which our ears can hear, we call it sound. But otherwise, Shabda is actually vibrations. And you know, it's amazing because science, modern science, has come to the understanding that everything is vibration. In fact, what you see as solid matter also is vibration. And today in higher secondary science, we learn that the dual nature of matter, where actually you and me, Prem, the rocket, the house, is also a vibration with differing wavelengths. So everything is vibration, and in fact, the pinnacle of science, the string theory, goes to the point of unifying everything and say, the string theory is called the theory of everything. The only problem is there is no verifiable proof, but you believe in it, it works. You know, it makes you wonder whether it's science or philosophy. It's like God. Have faith, it works. There's no proof. In the same way, but that string theory is based on this axiom that everything in the universe, the visible and the invisible, is nothing but bands of vibration. So I think that is the closest you get to God.
You'll be surprised to know that, in fact, Swami said this in a discourse, it seems. Hmm. One of our lecturers was sharing, I don't know, probably it was a private discourse in which Swami shared this. You know, we've all studied about the energy of a harmonic oscillator. Hmm. That's something which is basic quantum mechanics.
Hmm.
Where you derive an equation, I think it eventually comes down to, you know, E is equal to mu plus H in N.
H nu, something plus
H nu by 2. That's how it ends finally. Uh-huh. You know, that's the last one. N plus H nu by 2, I think.
Okay.
The
yes,
most simplified
yes.
version of that thing. Where N is the energy levels. Where, you know, the higher energy levels will have higher energy. So, according to that equation, even at zero energy level, at zero state, that's what we call it, N is equal to zero, you still have that factor of H mu by 2.
Hmm.
Which indicates when there is no energy, when there is absolutely zero energy, you still have a little bit of vibrational energy, mu. And Swami quoted this equation when he was talking to students.
Wow.
And he said that mu is pranava, the sound of Omkar. And Swami, and I mean, it's so beautiful when you said that Vedanayan sir was explaining that everything is vibration. I think that's why it's not even about that sound of listening. It's not about shravanam of hearing. It's about that feeling. You know, when you are in a place, you say,
the vibes
are very good. Vibrations are very good. This person is giving me very good vibes. I feel very, you know.
Yeah, and those vibes can either be because of your sight, can be because of the
absolutely.
Smell. You know, sometimes you enter and you get that agarbatti smell, you feel positive vibes. So there, shravanam took place through smelling. Sometimes you know, that's why they say they ring a bell, you hear. So any one of the senses can lead to the good vibes, or it can be a combination of senses. You see something, hear something and smell, and that is leading to some positive vibe. So therefore, it would be wrong to restrict Shravanam to only listening.
Right, I think the right explanation for Shravanam is vibrations. Right, no? So Shravanam is nothing but going in search of the right vibrations. I think that's precisely what Parikshit did. You know, 7 days, what are the right vibes I have to fill my life with? Of course, you know, it included mananam. You know, you wouldn't have been listening without thinking.
Mm.
Mananam comes 2 or 3 steps down the lane, but still, I mean, you cannot remove that from Shravanam. So this, I think it's a beautiful, I mean, we didn't plan it this way, but I think the best translation as in the language we have today for Shravanam is the right vibrations. To
right
seek
vibration.
The right vibrations, right?
We had promised our listeners, Prem, that we will be narrating an incident. I think we will definitely go to that soon. But before that, dear listeners, this is a little poem that Swami often says. In fact, all that science has said about vibrations and sound, Swami puts it in a beautiful manner in Sanskrit. I think we'll listen to that, and after that we will give you the promised episode.
Shabda Brahmamayi, Characharamayi, Jyotirmayi, Vidyanandamayi, Paratparamayi, Mayamayi, Srimayi. Itti pavitramainatuvanti yokka nalugu birudulato ee panchabhootamulu prapanchamunu saakuchunnavi.
In fact, the whole world is sustained because of these attributes that were given to them. The one of the sound, the one of movement, the one of light, the eternal bliss, the supreme, the illusion, and the mightiest and effulgent.
So that was the discourse clip where Swami speaks of the different attributes of Shabda. Shabda Brahmamayi, Characharamayi, Jyotirmayi, Vangmayi. I mean, yeah, and we heard the translation from Anil Kumar sir. So, that is the kind of place it is given to Shabda or vibrations. So with that, dear listeners, I think we are more or less covered on this topic of Shravanam as to how we should always seek positive vibes, vibrations, and seek God through all our five senses. And coming back to our first primitive definition of Shravanam, which is listening and active listening.
And one part of the Parikshit story we did not tell, which is probably, in, you know, it's a right time to even make a reference to that.
Hmm.
Parikshit's journey, spiritual journey starts with Shravanam, right? When he is in the womb of, I mean, Abhimanyu story, I'm sorry, not the Parikshit story, Abhimanyu story starts with that. And it almost like a reflection of that, Parikshit also undergoes that thing. He feels,
Parikshit is the son of Abhimanyu.
Right. He feels the vibes of the divine even when he's in the womb. And his journey of looking and searching for God starts right from that stage when he was a fetus in the womb.
In fact, you know, that is the reason Swami often gives the example of Abhimanyu, how he heard from the womb. And even to this day in India, a lot of importance is given. Thankfully, that culture is still alive, how much ever modernized it might have got. I have seen among my own cousins, in my own family, that when a woman is expecting a child, she is, exposed only to positive vibrations, bhajans and discourses and different things like that, because it's a firm conviction that the child is listening. That is possibly one more reason why it is called Shravanam, because even as a infant in the womb, as an embryo, it is able to listen, though it is not able to see, feel or touch or whatever. And in fact, the incident that I'm going to narrate is as recent as May 2015. Dear listeners, I'll just be reading out two different letters written to us on two different dates, and everything will become evident in that. So, Prem, I take your permission for the next 5 minutes, because I'll just be reading out two letters. The first letter is dated the 8th of May 2015 from one of our listeners who, as of now, wishes to be anonymous and not be named. Soon we will be interviewing her if possible. She writes, Sai Ram, Brother Prem and Brother Ganesh, I listen to the children's hour regularly as I am pregnant, and I want my child to hear most about the epics and mythologies of our great country. Yesterday, the drama on Mother's Day was amazing. I always wonder from where this kind of value and brilliance comes. It is only possible at the lotus feet of Sri Sathya Sai Baba. I like your program so much, but this drama moved me so much that I could not stop myself from mailing you. Please keep it up, and may Swami shower all His grace on all of you who are using their talent to spread Swami's message. This was a mail she wrote on the 8th of May 2015 from Burma, Myanmar.
Mm.
The next mail, and this is a mail that just made our hair stand on their end, is written on the 7th of July 2015. She writes, Sai Ram, Brother Prem, I am indeed happy to share one of the experiences that I had post-surgery. This is, of course, a reference to her delivery, the surgery. She says, I was in so much pain, but that was nothing compared to the pain that came. I was admitted in a hospital in Yangon, Myanmar. On the 21st of May, at 1:57, she gives a precise time. You know, the time there is 1 hour ahead of us.
Right,
so,
1 hour.
So 1:57 would be like 12:57, almost 1 o'clock Indian time. She says, on 21st of May, that was a Thursday, after the delivery, I got to know that I had given birth to a baby that is lifeless, and the doctors, a stillborn, the doctors gave up hope completely. They said, "Madam, we are very sorry, the baby is lifeless and nothing can be done." And the doctor left the room. I was shattered. I felt a lump in my throat. Anyway, just after my husband embraced me and told me it was fine, and he was trying to console me, his cheeks too were wet with tears, because after all, we were eagerly awaiting for something good that had turned into this immense sorrow. I asked my husband to call our family people, and once they came, we thought we would slowly break the sad news to them. But suddenly I remembered my dream, the dream that I had on the previous night. Beloved Sai visited the hospital and took my newborn baby in his divine hands, and he named her Sai Shruti. And then he said, "She is under my custody." And then he said, "Here to Radio Sai, my boys speak there. One boy speaks too much, the other rarely opens his mouth, provided he is allowed by the younger one." So, you know, and then he laughed out loud and my dream ended. These are the exact words I have quoted, though I did not understand much. And you know, I immediately asked my husband to open his iPhone and connect to Radio Sai. First he shrugged his shoulders and then he opened it. That was where I heard Brother Prem and Brother Arvind's voice talking on silence. You know, what a paradox, we were speaking on silence. I heard Brother Prem saying that silence is the preparation that God makes in order for you to receive something. As I heard both the brothers speak more on this topic, my troubled mind that was in pain really started to get silent. That was when the silence of the room broke with the loud cry of a baby. I thought to myself that this was the hallucination of my pained mind. But then my husband and the nurse rushed to the blanket where the stillborn baby was wrapped. And there, they started shivering in excitement. I could not see because I was lying on the bed and the cradle was kept a bit away. But I could gather from my husband's reaction that my baby had come alive. Seeing this miracle, we just broke into tears of love for our beloved Sai. We could really experience what is called as true bliss. The doctor came and he said it was unbelievable and it was amazing to see the baby being pulled out of the jaws of death. Though he was puzzled at that time, after some time he came up with some kind of a scientific explanation. That was not convincing for me, because this for me is God's miracle and nothing short of it. It was exactly 2:13 p.m. as per Burma time. So that's 1:13 p.m. right in the middle of our satsang, when the baby had cried out. "We are ever so happy to get our baby back, and that is all that matters to me. I am very grateful to Bhagwan Sai to have given me this beautiful gift of my life. As Sai had said, we have named her Sai Shruti. I am attaching her picture for you to see." Yeah, we all saw that beautiful baby. "Please continue to do the good work, because I don't think there can be any other greater blessing. Thank you so very much. I am planning to visit India after a few months, and I will come to visit Radio Sai." Dear listeners, we were just thrilled. We had tears of joy and gratitude to Swami, because we realize how we just sit and speak possibly, we are not even aware. And everything that is happening is just His love, His grace. He makes everything happen. And when we heard this, trust us, not an iota of pride came in our hearts. We felt the same what this sister felt, gratitude and immense gratitude for our dear Swami.
We started the program about, initially we spoke about Shravanam, where the best way, or even the story of Parikshit, where the best way when you are concluding the sojourn in earth is to start by listening to the, you know, the name of the Lord, the stories of the Lord. Mm. And here is an example where life starts by listening about Swami. And, you know, that is the beauty about We often say this in all our programs, in all our radio programs, even when we speak, we are the first listeners. You know, my ear is closest to my mouth before any other listener's ear is. And that is why even speaking about Swami, we are thrilled to go through this experience of Shravanam. You know, many times we speak things which we did not intend to, which probably in the best of our senses we would not have spoken about. This is only when you speak about Swami, I think you are not yourself. You're definitely taken into a higher level of vibration. And I think that is what Shravanam can do. That is what choosing to allow things which are related to Swami, which are related to divinity, to enter you.
Through all the senses.
Through all the senses. And, you know, what a beautiful avatar this is. It has given the maximum opportunity for that. No other avatar has given so much opportunity for that. Innumerable number of times Swami has allowed himself to be photographed. Innumerable number of times Swami has allowed himself to be videographed, and you have his own voice being played. And you know, it's not to my credit or your credit or anybody's credit here that you can, with a flick of a button, for 24 hours you can listen to Swami's voice.
And Prem, really I'm saying, see these little mercies that Swami does. He used certain brands of perfumes, and today when we smell that perfume, even to this day we remember him. You know, one way of seeing it is Swami used the perfume. Another way is forever now, you know, through our smell we can feel Swami. He's such a loving avatar that he has left behind for all our five senses ways in which we can feel him, connect to him, and charge ourselves with his vibes and vibrations. Indulge in absolute and true Shravanam. That is a great blessing we all have.
Yes, dear listeners, with these thoughts we conclude this week's afternoon satsang. As always, our hearts reach out in gratitude to Swami for giving us this opportunity to think of him, to speak about him, and to constantly listen about him. There is nothing more really we can ask for. And to share this joy with all of you just multiplies this joy that Swami has blessed us with. We're going to leave you with a song. Once again, it's a happy Sankranti from Arvind, me, and the entire Radio Sai team. On the other side of the song, as always, we'll be joined by Brother Chandu with another beautiful program of Love to Love.
बेचैन दुनिया को देख ना रहा मेरे गम का ठिकाना कि इन लोगों ने अब तक ये न जाना साई नाम है अनमोल खजाना
You are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you 24 hours a day the message of love of Bhagawan Sri Satya Sai Baba.